Well, good evening. It's good to see everybody out. This story doesn't have anything to do with the lesson, but I came up here about, 4:30 and was working. And my rule is if I come up here of the night and I'm doing work, my rule is when I get too scared is when I go home. And it's a good rule because you hear noises all the time in this building. Well, today at 4:30, this door over here, which is usually propped open to this classroom, it became unpropped, and that door slammed shut, and it was daylight, thank goodness. Those people who say these colors don't run about stuff, these colors do run really, really fast and hard. And so I say all that to say the other night I was at the school doing some cleaning, and Becky and Will were there, and I knew they were going to the game and seen them walking towards the football game. So I kind of assumed I had the whole place to myself. I had my earbuds in, and it felt like downtown Beirut. The whole place started shaking, and it took me a minute, like, oh, football game, they're setting off fireworks. But I'd already made it to the door to open the door to see what that noise was, and that's when I realized it was fireworks. And I turned around, again, had my earbuds in, music playing, and there was a lady standing about 3 feet and now in front of me. She was behind me, and it took everything I had not to throw my keys at her. I was so scared. So I just went ahead and went home after that. Same rule applied there as it does here. So I say that to say now you're going to want to scare me, but you don't have to. Just know it'll work. If you want to, it'll work. Well, I say all that to not get anywhere. About 75 years ago, some of you all may remember, Florence Chadwick. She was the first woman to swim the English Channel both ways. And I think, I don't really know that English measure of distance necessarily, but I think it's 41 miles about that. It's about 20 and a half miles one way on the English Channel. So she did it both ways. And then she decided in 1952 that she was going to swim from the Catalina Islands to the coast of California. And that's about 22 miles. So the day she chose to swim, it turned out to be pretty foggy, and it was cold, and she could just barely see the boats accompanying her. But still, she swam pretty good for about 15 hours, and then she begged to be taken out of the water. Her mother was in a boat alongside her and told her that she was so close that she could make it. And just being physically and emotionally exhausted, Florence just stopped swimming in the Pacific Ocean, and eventually, thank goodness, that they pulled her out. It wasn't until she was on board that she discovered she was less than half a mile away from the shoreline. And at the news conference the next day, she said, "All I could see was the fog. I think if I could have seen the shore, I would have went ahead and made it." And I think that's probably true, that she could have made it. It was only just another half mile. But Chadwick didn't give up necessarily because she was not strong enough to finish. She gave up because she became discouraged. She couldn't see the shore, and so she lost her faith. In her discouragement, she became blind. Well, in Genesis, much of Genesis, we read about Joseph. Joseph had two sons, and the names he gave them would seem to indicate that he had gotten discouraged at one point in his life. In Genesis chapter 41, beginning in verse 51, he says there that he named one son Manasseh. It says, "Joseph called the names of his firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. And the other he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." And you see that, Joseph's hardship and his affliction. What is that about? It has to go back to when Joseph was a younger man, back to his youth. There, just to go over a story we probably all know, Joseph had 10 half-brothers who really just basically hated him. And they hated him because of their father's love towards Joseph. And God seemed to even like Joseph better. And so God gave Joseph two dreams to indicate that the older brothers were going to one day bow down and honor Joseph. And you can imagine how that went over with the 10 half-brothers. They didn't appreciate it. And they become so angry with Joseph that one day when they got Joseph off by himself, they threw him in a pit. And the idea at first was they were going to murder him. But then Reuben had maybe a better idea. There happened to be a caravan of slave traders coming along. And so they sold Joseph into slavery. But then we read, as a slave in Egypt, things went, I guess, about as well as it can go for a slave in Egypt, right? That is, until his master's wife fell in love with him. And then when Joseph refused her advances, she accused him of trying to rape her, and her husband believed her. And so Joseph gets thrown in prison. And there for about 17 years, that's where Joseph languished, was in prison in Egypt. First as a slave, then as a prisoner. And in all this time, he had no hope really of seeing his home or his family again. I would say that was hardship and affliction, right? And that's why he named his sons Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, oddly enough, I don't think we ever read about Joseph crying or whining about his situations. When he was sold into slavery, he became the best slave that he could be. He was such a good slave that the Bible tells us that his master put him in charge of everything. And likewise, when he went to prison, he was the best prisoner that he could be. And the warden of the prison would make him a trustee. And again, almost a third of the book of Genesis is focused on the life of Joseph. But you'll never read about him, I don't think, of him being discouraged, except when we read about him naming his two sons. It would seem, I think, to me that Joseph would have every reason to be discouraged. But that's not what plays out. Joseph would avoid being filled with dismay and despair. And again, for 17 years, he lived this life as a slave or a prisoner, never expecting to see his home or his family again. He didn't deserve to be treated how he was being treated. And so how can Joseph avoid being blinded by discouragement? And I think that answer is found in that text. It says, "Therefore, God has made me forget all my hardships and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." You look there at what Joseph did. In the midst of his difficulties, Joseph put his focus on God. God made me forget. God made me fruitful. And so Joseph was so connected to God that his mindset was on God all throughout his captivity. In Genesis chapter 39, we read the stories there of Joseph's imprisonment and his slavery. And in that chapter, in chapter 39, verses 2 and 3, we read that the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. And then later, like we talked about, when Potiphar's wife accused Joseph falsely, Joseph, it says in verse 20 of chapter 39, that Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And it continues on in Genesis 39:23 that the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Now, in chapter 39, four times we're told that the Lord was with Joseph. That phrase, it does show up a few more times in stories about Samuel and David and Hezekiah, and there's a few others. But Genesis chapter 39 is the only chapter where that phrase shows up four times, especially in such close proximity. So why does it show up in Joseph's story? Well, it shows up because often Joseph knew that God was indeed with him. And that was the secret that kept Joseph from being blindsided by discouragement. I don't think it's a secret that everybody gets discouraged once in a while, and some people get discouraged a lot more often than that. But there's a couple of things to talk about tonight about discouragement. And so the first is this: if we just think about a really bad English lesson, the word discourage, we find the word courage embedded into it. And so discourage has a sister word, and that's encourage. And you'll notice there that courage is also a part of encourage. And the difference between those two words are those first one or two or three letters, right? The prefixes is what our English teachers taught us, and they modify the main word. And so the dis prefix means to take away or to remove. So discourage means that something or somebody has taken or removed your courage. And then opposite's true. Encourage means that someone has put in your courage back into you. So again, when we think about the word discourage, what would it take to remove or take away your courage? I think a lack of courage can come in lots of situations that we can't control, right? We feel helpless or vulnerable, and we feel weak. We're faced with dangers that maybe we can't understand or know how to properly deal with. And that's really what's happened to Joseph. Joseph has found himself in a foreign land with absolutely no chance of going home. He was a slave, and he was trapped in his slavery. He couldn't change the fact that he was not his own man. And when he became a prisoner, he was then locked behind doors that he was never allowed to open. It would be easy to understand if Joseph got discouraged. Now, none of us are in physical slavery in a foreign land today. And none of us, at this moment at least, are prisoners in a physical jail. But you might be a slave to some circumstances that you can't control. You might be imprisoned by some situations that you can't overcome. Maybe it's a health issue or a relationship that's falling apart or a job that you hate. The list could go on and on and on. But it's situations like that can rob you of your courage and of your hope. And they can blind you with disencouragement. So what can we do about that? How can we get our courage back? And I think the only way to get one's courage back that you've lost is to find your courage, right? And you have to find it somewhere else. So where do you look? Where are you going to get this encouragement? Where are you going to get the courage to be put back into you? And I think the answer is the same place that Joseph did, from God. That Joseph looked to God for strength. God made me forget. God made me fruitful. God was with me through all my difficulties. Maybe you've heard the phrase that God will never leave you or forsake you. And that's in the book of Hebrews. But really the writer of Hebrews was quoting Moses from Deuteronomy chapter 31, where Moses tells Joshua that the Lord is the one who will go before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid or discouraged. And then in Joshua 1:9, God says much the same thing to Joshua after Moses died. It says there that the Lord told Joshua, "Haven't I commanded you to be strong and courageous? Don't be afraid or be discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Now, I can't explain that. I don't know how that works. I just know that it does work. And it's a repetitive theme all throughout the Bible. In fact, it shows up in Paul's writings to the Philippian church. In Philippians 4, beginning in verse 4, Paul says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and I will say it again, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand." He's saying he will never leave or forsake you. He goes on and says, "Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." Isn't Paul saying, spend your time talking to God, focusing on God? And sort of he continues on, if you do those things, what do you get? You get the peace of God, which passes all understanding, and it will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Again, I can't explain that, but it passes all understanding. It doesn't make any sense. It's something that shouldn't work, but absolutely it does work. Someone once wrote that if you're ever going to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might, your strength will be born in a storm. Well, the thing to realize is, I think that you and I as human beings are weak, but our God isn't. As God tells the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. It's then when we learn to trust that God will never leave us or forsake us that we regain our courage. And so I'll close out this evening with a story about Gladys Allward. And I think I've told a little bit about this story before. She was a missionary to China pre-World War II. And she loved the Chinese people. But as the war started beginning, the Imperial Japanese Army was really doing some heinous things to the Chinese at the time. And she was torn by the belief that she couldn't just leave the people that she had learned to love and that she suffered with, especially this group of orphans that she was with. So she had one assistant to help her, and they led over 100 children over the mountains to reach freedom. And during that long and hard journey with despair and discouragement starting to fill up everybody, they were knowing that there really was no way to reach safety. The children were probably going to starve, and there was no way that she could stop this from happening. It became so obvious to the children that their leader was starting to lose hope and not sleeping. And so one morning, a 14-year-old girl in the group reminded her of a much-loved story about Moses and the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. The Israelites survived, and so would they. And the missionary, she bitterly cried out, but I'm not Moses. And the girl replied, of course you're not, but Jehovah is still God. Now that's sometimes where I end the story, but as Paul Harvey would say, this is the rest of the story. And when they came to the river, they couldn't cross for 4 days. They stood there on the banks, and at one point, a little child said, why doesn't God open the waters to the Yellow River for us to cross like he did the Israelites? And for a moment she paused and she thought, I can't open these vast waters. I have no power to do that of my own faith. But then she looked at the children and she said, let's all sing a hymn to God, and perhaps soon our prayers will be answered. And believe it or not far away, there was a platoon of army soldiers that heard the children singing. And when the soldiers came to where the children were at, they supplied food and stuff and water for the children. Also boats to cross the river. And then Gladys's children made their way to safety. I think that's a really cool story for that to work out. And so tonight the lesson is yours, as we say, the waters of baptism are ready. If you're here tonight and not baptized and you've made that decision, we're absolutely ready to do that. If you're here tonight and would like prayers to be made known for the congregation publicly that you need, now would be an opportune time to do that as well, as together we stand and we sing.